There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to this Monday edition of NFL Live. It is serious business. Chef D is here, fresh off the fire truck. No more bullhorns. Nice work. Listen, we don't have any fun around here. No fun zone. We're glad to have you with us. Wendy Nix, the Adam Schefter. Hey, when are you going to go to one name? Well, you do kind of Shifty. Like Shifty.
I guess.
Formerly known as Adam, Mike Tannenbaum, and Coach John Fox. Listen, it's not really about how for most teams they're just happy that you do arrive. When it comes to training, brings us to some notable holdouts who are not present in training camp this week. Will give us, in all seriousness, an update on these guys. And who should we start with? How about Michael Thomas?
Michael Thomas wants to become the first $20 million a year wide receiver. The same to make him the highest paid wide receiver in the game. But right now, it's just not enough. The two start talking. They continue to talk. And I think this, of all the holdouts, is the one that's likely to end the soonest, but there's still work to be done.
All right, then there is Melvin. Is Melvin Gordon with the Chargers?
This one is not likely to end soon. Both sides are in trip positions, and both sides feel as if they've given in here. The Chargers are offering him a good, but not what Melvin Gordon wants. Melvin Gordon wants to be the highest paid running back in the game. Doesn't seem either side is going to budge here. This one I expect to last well into the summer and very into the season.
And one that was questionable to start, but in fact he has held out, Zeke Cowboys.
Wendy, the fact that the Cowboys are even talking to Zeke right now, I think is an encouraging sign, because a couple of months back, I think the Cowboys' priorities were to extend Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper and Jalen Smith and Byron Jones. Zeke wasn't high on the priority list, but right now he's not in camp. And we know how important he is to that team. We'll see if they can figure out a compromise.
Well, it is Monday, and now that training camp is underway, no better time for Overreaction Monday. That's really hope springs eternal this time of year, but also so does overreaction. I'll say this, and you tell me, Coach, we'll start with you, if it's an overreaction. Ezekiel Elliott should be the priority for the Dallas Cowboys.
Now, when you look at Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper, as well as Zeke, I think he's third on the list, personally. I think Dak's probably number one. I'd go with Amari Cooper, number two. And I think Zeke, with 2 years left, he can be franchised. I think he's not the priority.
Amari over Zeke? You go with Amari over Zeke, Coach?
I just look at the effects he had when he was taken in the trade to Dallas. You know, how much they jumped in third down percentage as far as conversion rate. And then what he did for their passing game, he gives them a mismatch that they did not have.
Mike, you're someone who's been in front offices, who's made different types of decisions, who's had to rank things in terms of priority and importance. Where do you land here?
I agree with Coach Fox. He would be third for me.
Third?
For similar reason. You know, from a standpoint of on the field, you go back, they were 7-2 after they made the trade for Amari Cooper, first in the NFL, down, as you alluded to, Coach. But more importantly, one of the things that's interesting from this perspective is one of your audiences is the locker room, and they're going to hold you accountable to your actions. And when you have a winning quarterback that's done everything right, not only on the field but off the field, somebody like Amari who's been exemplary as well, you have to take care of them, fare them first, because if you pay Ezekiel Elliott with 2 years to go on his contract, that behavior is acceptable. And it's not. It's sending the wrong message to the franchise.
And you're saying he's got 2 years left. 2 years left in the contract. And then they could franchise him for two more. That's so right. You can make the argument that they control Zeke Elliott's rights for 4 or 5 years if they wanted. Now, look, nobody wants to use the franchise tag. He doesn't want it. They don't want to do that. But the fact of the matter is they have his rights for that long. So to think that he should be the number one priority when they have his rights already for 4 years, yes, he's critical to that football team. We know how great he is. But there's a lot of things that team has to get done financially, contractually. It's hard to make him number one.
Shefty, the chances that Elliott is there week one?
It's a tough question, Wendy. I mean, I don't know the answer. This could go any which way during the summer. Plus, these situations sometimes become inflamed. Just think back to Le'Veon Bell last year. He was going to come in, and then all of a sudden the offensive line is saying the things that they said. I think it alienated him some. It inflamed the situation. He didn't show up. Honestly, it could go either way, whether he's there or not. I would think that both sides are smart enough to figure out something, but things get awful personal, awful quick.
But you know what, Wendy? Because of the position he plays, look, I know they have a new offensive coordinator in Kellen Moore, but He'll know the protections. And my bigger concern, and Coach, I know you've dealt with this a lot, is not being in the building every day. What kind of condition is he going to be in? He'll know That's what to huge. Do. My concern is you get something done, the end out holds, it ends, and now he comes back and there's a soft tissue injury.
Well, I was going to say, then right. we have a right. risk of injury that's increased because you haven't done – you haven't.
And nobody trains as hard right. as they do right. around a team as they would do on their own. That's why people have personal trainers.
Well, speaking of injuries, unfortunately, an MRI has revealed that Cincinnati Bengals wide receiver A.J. Green has torn ligaments in his left ankle. This is according to Shefty here. They are likely to sideline Green 6 to 8 weeks. Really not a good situation. And teammate Tyler Boyd questioned the turf the team was practicing on when Green was injured.
The turf was terrible. I couldn't run any routes out there. I'm falling all over the ground, man. It was bad. It was rocks, pebbles out there, man. It was somewhere we should have been. Just feel like the turf was old. You know, it just wasn't. We didn't get good traction in and out of our breaks. You know, a lot of guys, not just me, was on the ground. But, I mean, we wasn't up there that long. But just got to make it work, man. We got to get through it.
Well, the turf was at Welcome Stadium. That's at the University of Dayton where the Bengals are practicing. Coach, you buying this?
Well, I haven't seen the video really in this instance, probably not. But I will say that, you know, field surfaces are very, very important for player safety. You know, whether it's a grass field, you know, whether it's the old school AstroTurf. I mean, when I was with the Pittsburgh Steelers, we practiced on hard old school AstroTurf every day for 5 years. So, you know, you got to look at it. But in that instance, I think it was a matter of a DB kind of rolling up on the back of his ankle. And that kind of was what I saw caused that particular injury. I'm not sure it was the field surface.
The problem here, in addition to the injury, of course, which is paramount, is the optics of this. And when you have a player who says this, it's sort of perception is reality. And then it's out there. And you got players who might believe this is the case.
Wendy, the optics to this are awful. And this time of year, teams are trying to regionalize their fan bases. I've been a part of that for a number of years. Every team has an operations department. And kind of like the offensive line, you never talk about the operations department until there's a problem. And part of their responsibility is to advance where hotels are, safety of the fields, and whether or not the field was safe or not. Now the perception is that it was a problem. Now, A.J. Green, in fairness, may have gotten hurt if it was on their regular practice field, but their players now think that was a factor. And they're at the University of Dayton. You have a rookie head coach. He's trying to establish himself. And now he has a problem in the locker room because these players are questioning what the organization did.
And that operations staff that you're referring to, Mike, signed off on the practices being there. The league went to them. They sent a site survey team to inspect the field. And that site survey team for the Bengals said this field is okay to practice on. Now, maybe they thought it's one practice we can get through. But now you've got a situation where you see A.J. Green get hurt on this play, and we could take another look at it right here, where he goes up for the pass, the DB lands on his ankle, he's on the turf, he tears ligaments in his ankle, he's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. Think about how much is at stake here now. You have a first-year head coach in Zach Taylor who's trying to come in and implement this program. They've already lost their first-round draft pick, Jonah Williams, to a season-ending injury. Now you lose your left tackle. You lose your number one wide receiver. They are at a loss there. And A.J. Green himself is going into the last year of his contract. So at a time where we're talking about new deals for Michael Thomas and Amari Cooper and Julio Jones, guess who else was on that list?
Yes.
A.J. Green. So what happens now to his value and his argument now that he is going to be out for some period of time?
And from an organization standpoint, that's a really difficult position because A.J. Green's going to say, hey, I've done all the right things. I was out there practicing at the University of Dayton because you wanted me to, and now that's going to hurt me and take money out of my own pocket. It could really cause a situation to go awry very quickly. And again, even if the operations team went through all the protocols, the perception is that this field wasn't safe, and now they have a problem with one of their best players.
Yeah, I think, you know, that team without A.J. Green, if you look at their record versus with A.J. Green, is huge. And so he's a big part of their team, and he's going to be missed.
There's a fair amount of injury here to start. You know, this is not the way you want to get off the ground. No team does.
Last year, he missed time with a toe injury. And when he was out of there, the offense did not operate the same. Tyler Boyd's production fell off. And everybody thinks Tyler Boyd will just emerge as the number one go-to guy. And he's a really good wide receiver. But the fact of the matter is A.J. Green, when he's out there, makes Tyler Boyd a better receiver. John Ross still has not stepped up as the first-round draft pick that he was. He says he's ready to do that. Well, they need him to do that. They've got some other players, Alex Erickson, some good young receivers, but A.J. Green is on a level with Julio Jones. He's that kind of talent, and when you've got Zach Taylor coming in to implement his offense, it's hard to get by without somebody that good.
We'll talk more about potentially season-altering injuries coming up just a bit, but it was just over a week ago that the NFL cleared Chiefs star wide receiver Tyreek Hill to return to work and announced he would not face suspension for the 2019 season. He had been investigated for criminal child abuse, was also on tape saying some relatively disturbing things to his fiancée. He addressed the media upon his return to camp.
I can't wait for my new journey, man. I'm excited. You know what I'm saying? I'm working every day, you know what I'm saying, to be a better father, better person, a better citizen, a better teammate, and a better son, too, you know what I'm saying, to my parents. So I'm evolving every day. So my mom, as I was going through this long process, my mom told me people don't need to change, they need to grow. And you think of a tree changes and a tree grows. Every day, you know what I'm saying, my mom told me that, Reek, you need to grow. You need to add layers to yourself, because if a tree grow, it doesn't go back, you know what I'm saying? So I want to grow. I don't want to change. I'm trying to grow each and every day of my life. You know, sometimes things get thrown out of context, you know, when feelings get involved and emotions, but I ain't going to get into all that right now. So thank you, guys. I love you. Cheetah back, man. Thank you for the support.
There's no doubting Tyreek Hill's impact on the field. Since he entered the league in 2016, he scored 16 touchdowns of at least 50 yards. That's more than double any other player in that span. He's also tied with Hall of Famer Gale Sayers for the most 50-yard touchdowns in the player's first three seasons in NFL history. On Saturday, Giants receiver Golden Tate received a four-game suspension for violating the NFL's performance-enhancing substance policy. Tate says the positive test stemmed from a prescribed fertility drug he was taking. Sources tell our Adam Schefter his appeal will be on August 6th and that a resolution is expected before the start of the regular season. His suspension, just the latest blow to the Giants' receiving corps. Sterling Shepard, currently out with a broken left thumb, suffered last week. He'll be back at some point, but the same cannot be said for Corey Coleman, who tore his ACL. And, of course, the Giants no longer have All-Pro wideout Odell Beckham Jr. He will not be there to save the day unless they need saving in Cleveland, at which point he might be available. Which brings us to this, Overreaction Monday. Odell Beckham, that trade was the worst move of the offseason, Coach. Now we have the benefit of hindsight.
Yeah. So hindsight's 20/20. I mean, some people would say that even before the injuries at wide receiver for the Giants, but definitely now with the suspension of Golden, you know, the hurting of Sterling Shepard and also Corey Coleman. You know, right now I'd say that makes it the worst offseason trade of the season.
There were just so many obstacles, I feel like, for this offense trying to bounce back to show last year was an aberration. You've got a veteran but aging quarterback. I mean, and now all of this, Mike, it's tough.
Yeah, I still think it's an overreaction because there was things going on there a year ago. He was causing problems. Obviously, we weren't there every day, but you know, this is going to be an offense that, look, there's some questions at quarterback. I think it's an offense that's going to go through Saquon Barkley, and sometimes you can have addition by subtraction. And look, if Sterling Shepard gets back at some point, you still have Evan Engram, a young, talented tight end, and obviously you're going to have Golden Tate for presumably 12 games. So I think this is a little bit of an overreaction.
Does this make it any more likely or less likely? Is there any impact at all on when we might see Daniel Jones if this, you know, if
yeah,
this is
I don't
just
really
a mess?
Think so, Wendy. I think really right now, I mean, that's a completely different position. Obviously, the supporting cast for a quarterback is huge as far as your options of go-to guys, and that list has just gotten smaller, all right, or at least the names as far as recognizable names has gotten smaller. But at the end of the day, as a head coach, you always dread injuries, but especially when it's in one position like the wide receiver position at this point, because what happens is it just compounds the problem. You go out and sign an older veteran that might be able to make an impact. You don't know what kind of shape they're in after having missed all year offseason. So to me, it just kind of snowballs.
But I would say this, that Eli now has a much tougher task in the first four games. And Pat Shurmur,
at a time when he's trying to prove he's still got something left in the tank.
Yeah, and Pat Shurmur's trying to keep his job. So they're going to do everything they can to win those first four games.
Yeah.
And if they're winning, I think Eli stays on the field. But I think how they go about it, it's going to look a lot more like the John Fox Carolina Panthers.
Yeah.
We're going to run the ball, and Saquon Barkley is going to be even more so the focus of this offense.
But now you know, right? Almost surely you know that offense is running through Saquon. So, Cant, if you're, you know, the opposing coach and defense react accordingly?
Well, I think, you know, they made some offseason moves that they thought were going to try to improve that. But now with the injuries, like I said, it snowballs. And it's just going to get more difficult, in my opinion, especially offensively.
Yeah, I would say this, though. Like, as much criticism as Dave Gettleman has gotten, I think he's done a very good job on the offensive line over the last few years, and I think they're going to see the fruition of their work come through. And even if, as you're saying, other opposing defenses are going to focus on Saquon Barkley, because the offensive line is a lot better, I think they have a chance to be successful.
Look, you know, there's opportunity here, clearly, for some of these younger players to step up. You certainly never know when someone will. But right now, when you look at this, they're in a tough spot, especially given the departure of OBJ and everybody wanting to point to that as a mistake to begin with, much less now. Minus Shepard and Tate, by the way, none of the Giants' other receivers had over 200 yards last season. Carson Wentz has help. That's true. The Eagles bolstered their receiving core with a familiar face. DeSean Jackson makes his return to Philly. Jackson joins Alshon Jeffrey and Nelson Aguilar. Carson Wentz talks about his new deep threat today.
Every day, you know, every day it grows, and, you know, whether it's on the field and you actually see it with live reps or after practice or off the side between reps during the team drills, and we're talking and then we watch film. I mean, chemistry grows in a million different ways, so to just get those more opportunities on the field, you see it, and it's exciting for sure.
Our Dan Orlovsky tweeting this from Eagles camp. At the Eagles training camp practice, Carson Wentz is putting on a clinic of anticipation and ball placement and touch and zip and all things to pertain to flat out dealing. That is what Eagles fans want to hear. They want a healthy and productive Carson Wentz for 16 games of the regular season. He's got the pieces in place around him. Could spell very good things for the Eagles.
Yeah, I see big things for Carson Wentz. And, in fact, you know, everybody's MVPs, you know, right now probably going in is going to be Pat Mahomes. But I think Carson Wentz has the supporting cast and the ability to make that happen this year with the Eagles. And I think DeSean Jackson, they've not had that kind of weapon in their arsenal until they got DeSean Jackson back.
And I know that Carson Wentz and Nick Foles might handle things as well as they could. They worked well. It worked for this team. But there does seem to be maybe just a renewed sense of, okay, this is my team. I'm healthy now. Nick has got his team. Carson Wentz just seems to be in a very good place with this team right now.
Yeah, and he should be, because they have excellent weapons. My concern with Carson Wentz is you go back to a senior in college, missed a number of games, hasn't been able to complete a season the last couple of years with the Eagles. So he has to be able to answer that question. You know, can he stay healthy? And the fact that it's happened both college and at the pro level is a concern. I will say at tight end, they've done an excellent job. Both Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert, their second-round pick from a year ago, are both excellent tight ends. And I think as this offense evolves, we touched about DeSean Jackson in terms of him being a deep threat. I think these two tight ends will really be the go-to guys for Wentz, and hopefully that'll keep him healthy as well.
So both Coach, you and Mike, we both agree. We all agree the pieces are in place. So what's the potential Achilles heel of this offense? Besides, I guess it's Carson Wentz staying healthy. But
well,
take that off.
Every head coach in the National Football League right now is fear of injuries. And no different than Carson Wentz. I mean, in 2017, he was having an MVP season. He was having a really good season last year up until he got his back injury. So really the Achilles heel is him staying healthy. When he's healthy, he's as good a quarterback as that's out there.
And unfortunately, I lived that 2 years ago. We were coming off of a playoff season in Miami. We're in practice, and Ryan Tannehill in training camp, non-contact, ACL done for the year. We go sign Jay Cutler, who was at the time retired. So they're one hit away from playing Zach Sudfeld. So that, as Coach Fox said, be it Howie Roseman, Doug Peterson, that organization knows they are one hit away. And they did such a remarkably good job of having somebody like Nick Foles there. He's not there anymore. That's what's going to be a concern for them.
I was just going to add that underscores why Nick Foles was so very, very important to this Eagles team, but also why he got an opportunity to move on and do something somewhere else. But you don't need the internet, I don't think, Shefty, to remember where you were when you sort of became aware of the NFL and what it meant. What's your first memory?
Wendy, Super Bowl 10, 1975. Lynn Swann coming off a concussion in the AFC Championship game against the Raiders. Some people thought he might not have played. Today he wouldn't play, but he did play in that game against the Dallas Cowboys. Caught four catches for 161 yards. One catch against Mark Washington, the Cowboys cornerback. Remember that catch? Lynn Swann bobbling the football.
Unbelievable.
I remember him making that catch and me going out in the backyard and trying to duplicate it. Lynn Swann's hands were a lot
better. I think you made a great choice to light Cam on for a young Adam Schefter. And, you know, what a personality Peyton is, really. I can't think of a better person to tell these stories and take us on this journey than Peyton.
Yeah, we spent that whole offseason of 11 recruiting him from when he's finished up at Indianapolis. And he's a character. I first met Peyton at the poolside at the Iolani in the first Pro Bowl that I coached. He and John Lynch. So there was a lot of refreshments.
we can use some out here today.
But that relationship helped get Peyton, and I think he enjoyed his last 4 years of his career with the Denver Broncos.
I'm sure he did. 100 years. In some ways, it's gone quickly.
Yes.
Well, it has. And how about some of the first? Week 17, 1992, Tony Dorsett, the first 99-yard run in NFL history, and it came on Monday Night Football. There he goes, 99 yards.
TD, the Heisman winner from the University of Pittsburgh.
Yep. You know, it's remarkable that he didn't get pushed out of bounds around the 30-yard line. Every time you watch it, it's like he's going to go out of bounds, and somehow he makes it 99.
Another first, and in this case only, the 1972 Dolphins, the first and only perfect season in the Super Bowl era. And I believe it, in one of these episodes we'll see Peyton visit with these folks.
Yep, they celebrate it every year. When there's an undefeated team, they go down.
It's a very prideful group that, yep. You know, they're still very closely connected.
Yep.
More from the Dolphins, 1984, Dan Marino, the first 5,000-yard passer in NFL history. His record would stand until 2011, quite some time.
Another pit grad.
Yeah, that's right.
He and Tony D.
He could still throw once in a while at practice. He would still have a catch. He still has some something left in that arm.
The best pure passer, thrower of the football that I ever saw. Yep.
Well, you got it like this. The day after Christmas, we all got a gift, and it keeps on giving because it's the first ever Lambeau Leap.
You should get royalties on that.
That's a great point.
News today, like, Leroy Butler gets nothing for that. Every time it's done, nothing, and he came up with the first one right here.
Here we go. Call Adam Schefter, your new agent, Leroy Butler. Week 11, 2018, the Rams beat the Chiefs 54-51, Monday Night Football, the first game in NFL history where both teams scored 50 points, the third most combined points in NFL history.
You know what was remarkable about that game was all the defensive points that were scored. Obviously, there was a lot of offensive fireworks, but both defenses made big plays in the game.
And in the world that we live in, it was a fancy football dream.
There were some bumps in the road during Cousins' first season in Minnesota, prompting some to suggest the pressure is now on for the Vikings quarterback. And with that, we will say hello to Dan Graziano, who is in Vikings camp in Eagan, Minnesota. And Dan, you spoke to Kirk Cousins. How does he approach the criticism he faced after last season?
Yeah, Wendy, Cousins told me, he said after last season ended, the way it ended, he just wanted to press the fast forward button and get to week one of 2019. He said, he sighed and he said, of course I couldn't. So I had to sit there and take it and listen to everybody say all those things. He said what bothers him the most is when people say all he is an NFL quarterback is a 500 quarterback. And he said that's obviously true. You just look at the numbers. He said, but he thinks he's better than figure out patterns. But he doesn't find them. He said last year we didn't have a lot of explosive plays. Last year we weren't very good on third downs. But there have been years where I was on teams that did have a lot of explosive plays and were very good on third down. So he hasn't been able to figure out anything that's been consistently keeping him at that 500 level. It's clear he thinks about it a lot. But at some point, he looked at me during the conversation and said, we just have to win.
Well, Dan, he's right. That's the quickest way out of that 500 mold, so to speak. And we'll continue with Overreaction Monday. And we'll say this. Kirk Cousins has more to prove than just about anyone else in the National Football League. Coach, overreaction or no?
You know, Wendy, I think it's not an overreaction. And it's not putting it all on Kirk Cousins either. Let's not forget, a year ago, they lost Tony Sperano like 2 days before they started camp. And losing your offensive line coach, the head coach is good coaching buddy on the staff, that's a huge blow for an offense, and that affects Kirk Cousins and his performance. I think hiring Gary Kubiak, all right, and the rest of that offensive staff, and they've had all offseason to work on it, I think you're going to see really good improvement by Kirk Cousins. I like his chances.
Yeah, I would say that is an overreaction because I don't think he has the most to prove from that position. I think it's Baker Mayfield, and we'll get to that in a second. But as it relates to Kirk Cousins and the Minnesota Vikings, last year when they made the offensive coordinator change, from John DeFilippo to Kevin Stefanski. It was the same week we played them at the Miami Dolphins. We knew they were going to run the ball. They ran the ball, and they beat us. And when you look at what Mike Zimmer stands for in terms of wants to run the ball, play action, get a lead, and then they've done an excellent job of amassing a number of good pass rushers, Kevin Stefanski fits that mold much more effectively than John DeFilippo. And I like the combination of how they built the team, who's calling the plays, and Kirk Cousins will be part of the solution, but it's not all on his shoulders.
We are asking whether Kirk Cousins has the most to prove of any player in the NFL. Let me give you the names right now. Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, Derek Carr, Ben Roethlisberger, Eli Manning, Jimmy Garoppolo. We can go on and on and just rattle off a bunch of names. There are quarterbacks in every single city with something to prove. You can't tell me that Kirk Cousins has more to prove than any one of those quarterbacks. They all have a ton of pressure on him. He's got as much as anybody, but there's no way. Jameis Winston, the last year of his contract. Mariota, last year of his contract. Garoppolo trying to prove his work. Derek Carr trying to show he could be John Gruden's guy. Ben Roethlisberger had a hand in Antonio Brown not being there. They all have pressure on them.
And you know what's remarkable? When you go back to Cousins a year ago, he threw for 70%, 4,000 yards, 30 touchdowns, and only 10 picks.
I'm going to throw the red flag. All right.
We need to get to one.
None of them make as much money as he does.
That's fair.
Let's not forget they were in the championship game the year before. They thought the quarterback was the reason they signed who? Kirk Cousins. And you saw what they did.
And so he went 1-6-1 against teams with a winning record last season. That got some attention.
Wait, one other name out there. Baker Mayfield, all the hype, everything going on in Cleveland, to me, he's the guy that has the most to prove, that's done the least. He's won one game in pro football against a team with a winning record.
But he took over a team that hadn't won like three games in 3 years.
They went two. They were on
the Super Bowl.
Two. I'm sorry. I gave them one too many.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Anyway you look at it, Kirk Cousins would like a better year, and he'd like to settle the waters in Minnesota. All right. Listen, you want to talk expectations. They are high in the Windy City as Mitchell Trubisky enters his third year as the Bears' starting quarterback. Camp there is underway as well. And Trubisky already talking about his growth and development as he continues through the early portion of his NFL career.
Yeah, just continue to criticize myself and try to be a perfectionist, but see the growth as well. So just it's practice. You're going to make mistakes. They're meant to be made, but you got to come back and correct them and get better each day. We know our defense is going to get us some plays, but for as an offense, if they stop us or they have a positive play on defense, it's got to be a next play mentality because we can bounce them and get them back the next play. Or it's a drill. They get us one drill, and that happens. Drill behind, they won that one. Let's go get out and get them the next one. I thought they got us in 2 minutes today, and then we had a little bit red zone section. And it's all about just that positive mindset, putting the last bad play behind us and moving on and making the next play. And we did a lot better a job of that today than we did yesterday.
All right, and this from Lewis Riddick just a minute ago. For all that are disrespecting my guy, Maserati bitch, I wouldn't do that if I were you. You will look foolish when the year is over. We shall see. Although he has been relatively clairvoyant with these things. Overreaction Monday, the Bears are favorites in the NFC North. Shefty.
I like the Bears, but to say that they are the favorites, I wouldn't do that. There's one word in there I would just change, which is why this is an overreaction. The Bears are not the favorites. They're a favorite. The Vikings are awfully good with your quarterback Kirk Cousins there, Coach. The Packers with Aaron Rodgers are always dangerous, and I think the Lions are very improved. So, to me, the Bears could win that division. I wouldn't be surprised at all. But any of those four teams in that division are capable of winning. There's not a favorite. Well, there's a bunch of favorites there.
I also believe it is an overreaction, and we talked about coaching changes before. They lost an excellent coach in Vic Fangio, who's now the head coach of the Denver Broncos. And I think Chuck Pagano is a very good coach. But to say that they're going to come back and be at the exact same level they were a year ago, I think that's a little bit of a stretch. I like a lot. We've already talked about Minnesota, what they've done. And I think Green Bay, combination of Matt LaFleur with Aaron Rodgers, I think they're going to be explosive on offense. So while I think the Bears will be competitive and in the mix, I don't see them as the favorite in the North.
I think it's an overreaction, too. I don't think they're the clear favorite, and I'll give you three reasons. Number one, they have a first-place schedule this year. They had a last-place schedule a year ago. Number two, two things that you can't duplicate in the National Football League, and that's health. They were the fifth healthiest team in the league out of 32 a year ago, and takeaways. They had 37 takeaways, and even though I know their defense is outstanding, they got great people character-wise and athletes – those takeaways are hard to duplicate year to year.
Since we have a clean sweep and we don't think they are the favorite, I know you said there's a multitude of favorites, but if you had to pick one who is the favorite for you in the NFC?
I wouldn't do it. Again, you I think just, they're all capable.
It's not happening.
They are all capable. By the way, at this time last year, when you said that the Bears were the favorites in the NFC North, you would not have said that, and they won the division. And that's what happens year in and year out in the NFL. There are always surprises, and I won't be surprised if there's another surprise NFC North winner.
And for me, it's the Minnesota Vikings, because I think they built their team in a complimentary way. And I just remember being there last year. When they get the lead in that stadium with their pass rushers and Mike Zimmer's scheme, they are going to be really hard to beat. They're getting Dalvin Cook back, who's had his own injury concerns. But, again, Kevin Stefanski embodies what Coach Zimmer wants to do. I think they're
with
the
Gary Kubiak and Rick Dennison, too.
Yes, and I think they're the most complete team of all the four teams in that division.
Yeah, see, I'm going to go Vikings as well. I know they're going to play defense. You know, obviously, some teams like the Chicago Bears that play defense in that division. But I'm going to like the leaps and bounds their offense takes this year under Gary Kubiak. You know, that West Coast outside zone scheme, they'll run it till the cows come home, and Dalvin Cook can run it as good as anybody.
And then, Coach, you're going to give Kirk Cousins a raise then, sounds like.
Well, I told you it was
not a raise. He doesn't need a raise, Coach. It's all good.
But I like his chances.
All right. Sorry, Aaron Rodgers.
He responded to the questions that we were asking about him, right?
Exactly.
Already.
Exactly.
Sounds good, sounds bad. Questions continue regarding the long-term health of Todd Gurley's knee. Questions that began with his limited productivity and opportunity in the 2018 postseason and continue now through the start of training camp.
It's a great plan. veteran plan. That's why I love Coach. That's why I love Reggie. That's why I love the whole strength staff. That's why I love the Rams. It's gonna be a good camp. You know, obviously when it's time to work, it's time to work. But when it's time to just sit back and relax, you know, I need to do my part as well, making sure I'm ready, getting mentally prepared, and just staying focused, helping other guys out, you know.
Todd Gurley clearly referring to the way he and the Rams will approach training camp as we make our way toward the regular season. Shefty, sounds good, sounds bad.
Sounds good. Listen, they're smart with what they're doing with him. They know how to handle it. I think that, you know, the public seems a lot more concerned about Todd Gurley than the Los Angeles Rams do. When you speak to the Rams, they sound like they're putting him on the plan. They're going to preserve him. He's going to be healthy as the season goes on. They drafted Darrell Henderson in the third round from Memphis. They matched the offer sheet that Malcolm Brown signed with Detroit. They've got depth, and they're going to manage Todd Gurley in a more effective way this year so that he lasts longer, at least in their eyes, this year.
You know, earlier in the show, we had talked about all the weapons on the Philadelphia Eagles. You look at this Ram team. Cooper Kupp is a very underrated player who's coming off of an injury in the slot. He creates production for so many others because he's so efficient on third down. They have Brandon Cooks. They have a lot of weapons on the outside to go with someone like Todd Gurley. So he doesn't have to, unlike the Giants with Saquon Barkley, have to shoulder the load. So I think, again, with Malcolm Brown, with Henderson, they'll be smart with him. And, again, with all the other weapons they have, he just has to be part of the solution.
Yeah, I think it sounds good, too. I think they're just managing it. And I had Matt Forte that did that for a lot of years, a very productive NFL career for a long time. As long as they handle that right, I think it sounds great.
All right, let's do another, shall we? Cam Newton making progress in his continued recovery from off-season shoulder surgery. The Panthers quarterback has acknowledged he's adjusted some of those mechanics in advance of what he hopes will be a complete season. He say to Peter King, I embrace this whole process because it's made me feel like a rookie again. Certain things, learning new mechanics, focusing on the little nuances of playing a quarterback position and trying to, at this point in my career, it's not about velocity. It's not about throwing a ball 70 yards. It's going to win football game. Coach, sounds good. I'm trying to brush it, but I'm not sure.
It sounds great.
Hey, that's what I thought. I was
Anytime a player echo what a coach was, Norv Turner and Scott Turner, his coach, I think that sounds great because Cam, that light went on, and now he's thinking, and I think that'll make him a lot better football player.
What did he say there that makes you think, say that he's sounding like?
It's not how big, how fast you are. It's not how strong your arm is. Not execution of the positions quarterback, and that I love that echoed coach speak.
Why, yes, you do.
Yes.
And for him to remain healthy. One is he needs to fight another day. Mm-hmm. Slide, get ball. The other is Christian McCaffrey. On his hands.
Yep.
Checkdowns. Those are long. Completion percentage goes up. Ball goes up. Ball's out. Those two things alone will make him a better chance to play in 16 games.
And there are a lot of weapons around. It's not just Christian J. Moore, Curtis Samuel, Greg Olsen. They've got a lot of weapons there on that offense. He has evolved all around. You talk about the way he runs. How many times have we heard guys 2-3 years say he has to be smarter about the way he runs, take fewer hits? So I think as a quarterback overall, he's evolving and getting to the spot where he should be able to produce at a high level. Sounds good.
Cam averaged a career low 7 air yards per attempt last season. We know, of course, that
as a Panther fan, are you happy with him, Wendy?
Well, I like that top two. I need him on the field all 16 games.
Making sure.
Yeah, there we go. This might be my favorite one, though. All right, so right camp, Tut, Tempers flare, although it was only for 4 days in. But the Browns are young and brash, we know that, and they got into a little skirmish. But if you think that Freddie Kitchens liked it, you are incorrect. He did not. In fact, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he made the whole team run. Because he's a new head coach. There's a lot of things going on there. To take this, we won't say sounds back because we didn't hear anything. But do you like coach, Mike?
I don't, because as a rookie head coach on your problem, Cam Thomas, a young player, and you're saying that behavior's not acceptable. However, you like some veteran players there who know how to condition, who know how to get ready, and they're going to grumble about it in the
locker room. Because he punished the whole team.
Exactly. So, and coach, you know this. It's always a balanced approach because we want 90 players this time of year. It's not necessarily a one size fits punishment because there's going to be 30 be there, alienate key veterans in camp.
So, coach, real quick, consequences if wrong in life, something wrong. There are, because practice. That's it. Our team. Team me. To me. Together. Way we approach. His take.
Yeah, sounds good. I think as long as policy for, and in front of it. Team knew about, you're accountable. Accountability next to the guy next to you. And he's right about team, everybody accomplishes more. And if that's going to be your philosophy and that's going to be your system, then, you know, I'm all for it.
Fair to say some coaches have a different take. Are there coaches who are okay with the tempers flaring in training camp? Some who prefer it not.
Yeah,
there seems to be a different philosophy and approach across the league.
By the way, an eventful weekend for Cam Thomas. Started a fight,
yep.
And also flipped the bird to a fan. Not exactly the wisest course of action.
He might be doing more running than a lot of people.
Can't be doing those things, right?
No, that's dead wrong, and I'm sure that's addressed. So, you know, whenever you have, you know, look, NFL locker rooms are a unique group of people, and you have to have rules, you have to have regulations, you have to have policies for just about everything. And as long as you hold guys accountable, they don't want to be lied to, they want to be told the truth, and you got to treat them like men, and that's your policy.
All right, a quick update. Again, training camp underway for all 32 teams around the league, many of whom are on the practice field this afternoon. So this from our Rich Cimini, Jameson Crowder having tests for a foot injury. For Adam Gase, he said he does not know the severity yet.
Jameson Crowder's confident that he's fine, but again, Adrian Green, well, maybe he didn't know that he was going to be, you know, to the extent he was. I think going into the MRI, Jameson Crowder does not believe It's a significant injury. We'll see what the MRF shows you.
That would be a significant injury for them. If you look at what the Jets did in the offseason, went in early. They got Le'Veon Bell, Jameis Crowder, and Adam Gase's outer fence. Coach, as you went, so the slot position is a really important position. They had high hopes for Crash, and they, let's hope this is just a bump in the road and nothing.
The MRI will tell the tell the truth.
We'll wait and see. Absolutely gives you chills. The Pro Football Hall of Fame welcomes 8 new members again. Champ Bailey, Gonzalez, Ty Law, Kevin Mawai, Ed Reed, and Johnny Robinson. Contributors Pat Bowlen and Gil Brandt will also be enshrined on what is always a great way. Right, today we hone in on Kevin Mawai, one of the greatest centers of all time. 6 seasons with 3 teams, the majority of teams the time with the time. Jets, the 8-time Pro Bowler, paved the way for 7 1,000-yard rushing seasons for Curtis Martin, also a member of the NFL's all-decade team of the 2000s. No better time to have you here, Mike, because you are with the Jets. In fact, signed Mawai, I do believe. What, if you had to pick a memory or story that exemplifies who he is as a player, what would it be?
Yeah, I'm so proud of Kevin and everything he accomplished. And truly, this one story, this embodies what he stood for. We had a game against the San Diego Chargers, and he broke some bones in his right hand, and he was our starting center. And we thought he'd be out for a number of weeks or maybe move to guard. And athletically, he was so important to our game, not only in the running game, but in the passing game, screens and getting out in space. Well, he taped up his right hand. He started practicing, snapping the ball left-handed. We have this key game against the Miami Dolphins, and all week long he practiced. And he said that he'd go ahead and do it. And by the end of the week, he had convinced Coach Edwards, our head coach, that he'd go ahead and snap. He'd go left-handed, and left-handed to beat. We go ahead to beat. We beat the Miami Dolphins. We beat and Kevin Mawai. And Kevin didn't miss a beat. Didn't miss a beat going from being a snapper to a snapper.
Wow. Crazy. I mean, that's incredible when you think about it. You know, you got 2 hands. I'll use the other one, despite the fact that I'm an elite athlete.
Who Kevin is. He's an elite athlete, teammate, all great. And again, complimentary skill. So good and so really played. Really smart and strange. It was a good fit. It was a standpoint. Really embodied. Really.
Have more. Hall of Fame, Adam, joined by John Johnson and Johnson tonight on Eastern. James in the field, taking the field, big expect, final year of.
He's been in great. He's the hardest worker I've ever. And hitting each other and things like that. But everybody's really excited about this year because we know the NFL is a lot of parity.
Right there. This year it feels the same way.
for games in this league, and we have to finish strong.
We are revisiting the big holdouts for five former Pro Bowlers. We'll get updates from Adam Schefter. And let's start with none other than Ezekiel Elliott, Schefter.
They right now are not having much contact, Wendy. Again, they had open dialogue trying to get a contract done, but nothing on the horizon right now. No signs of Zeke. And I think with a running back sometimes, especially like Zeke, you're almost better off having him not take the pounding in training camp. As long as they get this deal worked out in a few weeks, he should be fine to go for the regular season. But if we get past that spot, then it gets to be a little worrisome.
Which is why we have the matter meter, okay? The holdout matter meter, Mike.
All right.
Okay, one is, okay. Wait, here you go. I'll help you out here. Oh, look at me.
Funny how that works.
All right, yeah. Over here, one doesn't matter. 10, a lot. There's some real estate in between. Zeke Elliott.
So for me, this reminds me a little bit of Darrell Revis. He held out. He was a cover corner, played man-to-man, missed a lot of training camp. We still went to the championship game that year. So I'm going to say from it doesn't matter at all because he'll be ready to go. A little concerned about conditioning. Want to make sure that we don't come back and have a little soft tissue injury. But he'll be ready to go. He'll know the offense. It shouldn't matter.
Well, and this is clearly assuming he comes back at some point and continues to play. Not talking about a situation where he misses the season. That's a whole different matter meter.
Yeah, he knows the system. You know, I agree with what Sheffy said earlier. He's going to take some of that beating off of him, all right, which he doesn't need at this point in the season, in training camp, or really even for preseason games. You know, I think as long as he's there for week one, I agree with you.
All right. It doesn't matter. How about
the worry meter starts going way up about two, 3 weeks from now if he's not there and they're not talking and they're not getting a deal done. Then it's going to matter an awful lot.
You know what?
He better be there for the start of the season.
We'll do it again. We're going to do the matter meter again in a few weeks just because you've got that show.
Okay, you got it. We'll bring it back
up. We're going to bring it back. So what about Michael Thomas?
Michael Thomas, I would say, if these guys can get him back.
We got there.
I'm worried.
This one matters very little. You want to give me?
Melvin Gordon.
Come on, we're going to stay with it. It's still you. No, okay.
Give me a color there, Mike. Okay, here we go. Matters next to none because we got a situation here where I don't think those two sides are that far apart. At some point, somebody is going to get something done. Now, look, if this is still going on 2-3 weeks from now, same thing like Zeke. Turn it up a lot. Turn up a whole lot. But right now, we can live without Michael Thomas there.
Yeah, see, I go the other way on this. My matter meter is way over here.
Right now, today.
If he gets signed in the next week or so, I agree with you, Shefty. Well, obviously, it wouldn't matter. But they don't have another X receiver like this. And Sean Payton's offense, that X receiver going back to Marcus Colson or now with Michael Thomas, I mean, their offense doesn't roll without this guy. He's got too big of a radius. He's too big of a body. He's got big, dependable hands. I think it'll matter a whole lot.
I agree with Coach. Their next two best weapons, Jared Cook at tight end and Alvin Kamara at running back, the depth of that position, not only at X, but at Z and slot, really falls off quickly.
All right. The matter meter. The matter meter high for these guys. How about Melvin Gordon?
I think this matters a lot. And I'll say, basically, this matters a lot because the two sides, I think, are far enough apart. And there are enough signs that this is going to go on for a while. That I think that they're going to have to make do without Melvin Gordon. And that's going to matter this season because they're a good team without Melvin Gordon, but they're not as good.
Yeah, so as a holdout, I think as it matters, not that much. He knows the offense. He knows Phillip Rivers. As long as he comes back in shape, I don't think it matters that much right now. Now, again, if he doesn't show up week one, week two, that's different. But as a holdout, because of the continuity of the system on offense and the other players around him, right now, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, I think it really is. Just looking through all three of them, and I relating back to Le'Veon Bell a year ago, I think early on in that ordeal, nobody really thought it mattered that much, you know, and they thought he was going to be back. He'd be back for week one, all right? But he
ended
up missing
a whole season.
That's why we
bring it back.
All these really matters a lot if none of them show up for the season. That'd be a real high.
That's a bigger discussion. We don't even have a graph for that. Which of these, in your estimation, means the most to their respective team? Which matters the most?
Well, if we're just talking about these three, it has to be Michael Thomas.
Yep.
Because, again, the lack of depth at receiver for the New Orleans Saints. Now, Tegan, he's flash. But, again, the next two best weapons they have are at tight end, at running back. At least at these other positions, for these other teams, the Chargers and the Cowboys, there's a lot of other weapons. So I think Michael Thomas is really holding the cards as it relates to his position and the Saints.
I agree totally, and not discounting Melvin or Ezekiel for what they mean to their football teams. They're outstanding football players, but as far as they don't have a guy that can replace Michael Thomas.
Shefty?
I think Zeke is the one that matters the most because of his importance to the team. Yeah. To me, Michael Thomas is a great receiver, and they don't have a lot of depth there. You guys are right. And Melvin Gordon, they've got Justin Jackson, Austin Eckler, some other guys. They're a better team with Melvin Gordon. But Zeke, if none of these guys played this year, the Dallas Cowboys would be the most impacted by the absence of those three players, in my mind. The Saints have shown in the past that they could play without certain wide receivers. I don't know if the Cowboys can be a Super Bowl contender without Zeke Elliott.
All right, well, guess what? Here's the good news for the Saints, maybe. I mean, they did have someone in camp today. There was a Zion sighting. So I don't know if that's going to spell relief for their current problem, but nonetheless, there he is. Chad.
Be their new ex.
Brief. Yeah, their new ex. Then we got a whole another kind of meter. Full 32 teams now in training camp. That means there will be injuries. And this one notable for the Cincinnati Bengals, A.J. Green. You can see right here coming away, carted off the field and coming away with torn ligaments in his ankle. The feeling, at least right now, is he'll miss 6 to 8 weeks. Here's Tyler Boyd on the turf.
The turf was terrible. I couldn't run any routes out there. I'm falling all over the ground, man. It was bad. It was rocks, pebbles out there, man. It was somewhere we should have been. Just feel like the turf was old. You know, it just wasn't. We didn't get good traction in and out of our breaks. You know, a lot of guys, not just me, was on the ground. But, I mean, we wasn't up there that long. But just got to make it work, man. We got to get through it.
Well, Shefty, let's start with this. The turf notwithstanding, is this an injury that should take the requisite 6 to 8 weeks and then he really will be back? Or...
Well, he's going through more medical opinions. He's having an MRI today with another medical specialist. They'll assess that foot injury further, the ankle injury. But, again, the first MRI came back, and it revealed torn ligaments in the ankle. Now, what's interesting here is that they're looking at it now as a 6 to 8 week injury. So once you get past those 6 to 8 weeks, you have to see where he is. And, again, I bring up the money factor now. What happens if, while he's out, Michael Thomas gets paid $20 million? What happens if Julio Jones gets paid more than $20 million? What happens if Amari Cooper gets paid? Why should A.J. Green rush to come back when he's going into the last year of his contract?
And Adam, to your point, this is a really delicate situation because he's going to say to the Cincinnati front office, hey, I was doing exactly what you asked me to do. I was practicing at the University of Dayton for you, and now you want to take money out of my pocket, and that's a really tough dynamic. So when you're dealing with a lower body injury on a skilled player like A.J. Green, we're not talking about offensive or defensive linemen here. 6 to 8 weeks, to me, that sounds like 8+ weeks until you're back to full speed. So the fact that he's in the last year of a contract, that exacerbates already what was going to be a difficult situation.
Now, not being a doctor and not knowing the exact prognosis, but this sounds a little bit like a high ankle sprain.
It is a high ankle sprain.
They can be 6 to 8 weeks. And I had a guy miss a whole season, and Julius Thomas, and then come back, and it was still bothering him, and they ended up finding out he had to have surgery. So he was out 2 years, and he ended up, you know, having a big year the following year. So, you know, to your point, I don't know really how contractually that's going to work out, but, you know, it sounds like a pretty serious high ankle sprain to me.
Well, it puts everybody in a bit of a tough spot. Speaking of tough spots, Trevor Bauer found himself in a difficult situation over the weekend. It was Sunday. He's a pitcher for the Cleveland Indians. And look, you know what? He got mad or upset or all of the above, and I can imagine that conversation right there. He throws the ball into the stands. Obviously not the best choice, but we've all been there. Listen, it got us thinking about some of the more notable
NFL moments.
That went out on Monday night television. A lot of fans are talking about it right now as a big problem with this team. Can you put into context what was going on at that moment? What caused
it? What Deuce and I talk about is nobody else's business.
But why was something funny when you're down 18 points in the fourth quarter?
It wasn't funny. I wasn't laughing about anything.
The camera showed you laughing.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. That's fine.
Commenting about it.
That's fine. That's fine. I'm not laughing about it. You think this is funny? I take this serious.
I'm not.
Real serious. I put my heart and soul into this every single week.
All I'm saying is the camera shows.
I'm just telling you right now what I do every single week. Every single week. I put my freaking heart and soul into this. I study my ass off. I don't go out there and laugh. It's not funny. Nothing's funny to me. I don't want to go out there and get embarrassed. on Monday Night Football in front of everybody?
That's why I'm asking you.
I'm telling you right now, we're not. We're talking. Deuce and I are talking.
What was the context?
I'm done. Sorry.
I mean, it's kind of fun. It's kind of funny now. Come on, it's a little bit. It's a little bit funny. You know, you've had to answer tough questions. It's not easy. Look, it's not easy, but it sometimes.
Yeah, it comes with the territory. You're starting quarterback on national TV. You got to sit in there and you got to take it. Those are tough situations.
No doubt. I mean, it's all part of the job. I mean, as a coach, it's probably one of the worst parts about the job, actually.
But, all right, let's do the coach. You know,
that's why we're compensated so well.
Here's Denny Green.
The Bears are who we thought they were. And that's why we took the damn field. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their ass. But they are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
Love it.
I remember that game. They had them beat, too. They had them beat, and they gave the game away. And that's why Denny was so mad.
Coach, you ever lose your cool?
Oh.
Not
quite to there.
Yeah, you did all right.
Yeah, I think I hung in there pretty good.
Okay.
That was kind of like an Arizona Cardinal-themed sort of
thing
there, right?
Something going on in the desert, I guess. It's hot.
That was the PR guy saying, thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Coach. Thanks, dude. Thanks, Coach.